on item number 5, initiation of groundwater sustainability plan for the Santa Rosa Plain.
Thank you, Chair Noren, members of the board. It's a pleasure to see you all today. I'm just going to give a brief introduction to one of our colleagues and partners in the realm of groundwater and sustainability. Today, we have the pleasure of Mr. Marcus Trotta, principal hydrogeologist from the Sonoma County Water Agency. Definitely a strong partner with the water agency and a leader throughout the region. When we take a look at SGMA and the various basins, the 8 priority basins that stretch from Santa Rosa Plain all the way up to Del Norte County and Smith River and then out to Tule and Butte, Scott and Shasta, and might as well throw Ukiah in there not to forget about them. The Santa Rosa Plain has been ahead of the curve and definitely in both government formation, inclusion and diversity within their board, and science. And having such a robust amount of partners and well thought out analytical models and efforts by the U.S. Geologic Survey. So without any further ado, it's a pleasure to introduce Marcus. I'll turn it over to him.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me here today, Chair and members of the board. So my plan is just to give you an overview of kind of where we're at here in the Santa Rosa Plain with implementing the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act. And I'll do that by starting out with a little bit of background, focusing on the formation of the Groundwater Sustainability Agency that was required by the act. And then I'll spend most of the time talking about our next step in the process, which is to prepare a groundwater sustainability plan for the basin that needs to lay out how this basin is going to either maintain or achieve sustainability into the future. And then I'll talk about our planned approach to develop the groundwater sustainability plan here in the Santa Rosa Plain and get into kind of a little bit on our proposed schedule and next steps. And we should have a little bit of time for questions and discussions. So the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, or SGMA, became law on January 1st, 2015. It really is the first statewide initiative to require managed groundwater management of both water quantity and quality in the state. And it applies to medium and high priority basins throughout the state. The state Department of Water Resources went through a process of prioritizing all 515 alluvial groundwater basins that we have in the state of California into medium, high, low, and very low priorities. In Sonoma County, of the total 14 groundwater basins and sub-basins, 3 of those rose to the ranks of medium priority, and those are the shown in yellow on this map. So it's the Sonoma Valley and Petaluma Valley down in the Region 2's jurisdiction. And then here in your region, it's the Santa Rosa Plain groundwater basin. Shown there is 1-55-1. And also shown on this map are the larger watershed areas of a couple of those groundwater basins, including the Santa Rosa Plain. And so those areas were the focus of some of the technical studies that have been done in the county by the U.S. Geological Survey that looked at the entire watershed, and as well as a voluntary groundwater management planning that was initiated several years ago that also focused on that watershed area. But it is important to note that SGMA applies just to the alluvial portions of those basins, the actual groundwater basins that are defined by the state Department of Water Resources in Bulletin 118. And so that's the area that's shown in yellow, and that is the jurisdictional area of this new groundwater sustainability agency. So SGMA lays out essentially 3 main steps and milestones that are required to be achieved by local agencies, local agencies and communities. That's one of the tenets of SGMA, is it really does put the onus of management and complying with this act on the locals. But it does set up a backstop in the form of the State Water Resources Control Board has the authority to intervene in basins that don't meet any of these mandated requirements at the timelines that are given. And so that first step was due in June of this past year, 2017, and that was to form a groundwater sustainability agency or agencies that covers the entire footprint of each groundwater basin. And that was successfully completed in Sonoma County, and actually pretty much successfully completed statewide by that deadline. The next step is to develop a groundwater sustainability plan because we do not have any critically overdrafted basins here in the state, which need to get their plans done by 2020. We have until January of 2022 to develop that plan and submit it to the get it adopted by the Groundwater Sustainability Agency Board and submit it to the State Department of Water Resources for their review and approval. That document needs to lay out how the basin is going to either maintain or achieve sustainability within 20 years of adoption of that plan. So for us, that pretty much puts it out at 2042. And DWR does have the ability to grant up to 2 5-year extensions if the agency is showing good progress on meeting that objective, if they're not quite there by 2042. And so just a little background on how the GSAs were formed here in Sonoma County. So SGMA does allow for multiple GSAs to exist within a single basin. So you could have, for example, in the Santa Rosa Plain, we could have had up to, I think, 4 or 5 cities be their own GSAs. The county and other countywide organizations could have been GSAs for those unincorporated areas. But there's a significant burden on put on those areas that go that route because there's requirements for coordination. They need to agree upon certain components of the groundwater sustainability plans. And so the thinking here was that it would be a lot more expensive and cumbersome if we had multiple GSAs in each basin. So there was a lot of work put into negotiating joint powers of authority agreements in each of the three basins here in Sonoma County that sets up a new agencies that's made up of members reflective of the cities, the county, the Sonoma RCD. I'll show you a slide next on who the member agencies are in each of the three basins. And so for all the basins in Sonoma County, there's a single groundwater sustainability agency that's responsible for implementing SGMA. And because a lot of the member agencies are several of them occur in all three basins, there's kind of some natural coordination that happens between the three basins that we have here in Sonoma County. And then staff that's working on behalf of those agencies is also shared across those basins. So there's some advantages to having this structure in that there's kind of a built-in coordination that's happening and efficiencies that are being realized that way. So the member agencies for each of the basins are shown here. In the Santa Rosa Plain, there's 9 members. There's actually 8 members of the agency. The last one on the list, the independent water suppliers, are not members, parties to the JPA, but they are able to participate under SGMA, and so they do have a seat on the board of directors of the agency. So all the cities and the town of Windsor are included as member agency, the County of Sonoma, the Sonoma County Water Agency, the Sonoma Resource Conservation District, and the Goldridge Resource Conservation District are all the members of the JPA. Each member has a single seat on the board of directors. And that board's been meeting since June, and the meetings are all noticed on a website, sonomacountygroundwater.org, that's at the end of my presentation. That includes all the agendas and meeting minutes. They're all public meetings that are open to the public. They meet about every other month, and they also have advisory committees. Each board has their own advisory committee The goal of those advisory committees is really to provide for a broader group of stakeholders to participate in the process, the Sigma process. And so there's seats that are appointed directly by some of those member agencies, and there's also seats that are specific to different interest groups. So there's agricultural interest seats, there's environmental organizations that have seats, rural residential well owners, business, to round out that advisory committee. And they're advisory. They provide recommendations to the board on a variety of matters. Right now, they're going to really start diving into a lot of the more technical components of the process and in developing the groundwater sustainability plans. They're also advising on community outreach, fee proposals. Each of the GSAs is currently initiating a fee study on looking at options for generating funding for this first phase of getting the GSPs completed. We have been successful in getting $1 million awarded by the state in each of the three basins to help support the development of the GSPs, but there's still some additional costs related to the administration of the agencies that's going to need some funding. And so far that funding has come, at least for the first 2 years, from member agency contributions, but for the years 3 to 5, until we get that GSP completed, there's going to be a need for some additional funding to come forward. And so that fee study is ongoing. There's already been 3 community workshops on that, or one in each of the basins, and there will be more to come. The advisory committee will also be advising on any regulations that the GSAs are considering, the coordination between those basins, and then the kind of the catch-all general advisory. So the rest of my presentation is mostly going to focus on the groundwater sustainability plan itself that we're embarking on. And the state developed emergency regulations in 2016 that describes what these groundwater sustainability plans need to include, what they need to address. In general, if you kind of break it down, there's three main components to those plans. The first is really describing, kind of who you are, what your basin's geology and hydrogeology looks like, what the groundwater characteristics and conditions are. The next phase is what we see as likely to be the most challenging and lengthy portion of the plan, and that's really to because there is some flexibility on how local agencies define sustainable for each of their basins. That's going to be the large component of that, setting up what sustainable criteria are for our basin and how to measure and track that over time is what goes into that phase of the project. And then once you define what sustainability is and how you're going to be measuring it, then you need to look at what programs and actions are needed to either maintain or achieve sustainability in your basin. And then you also need to include a plan for implementing the plan that you've agreed to in terms of how you're going to fund it and what types of projects you're going to do and what the time frame is for them. DWR has developed a number of best management and guidance documents to help GSAs along the way, and so we'll be relying on those quite a bit to guide us through the process. So just a little bit on each phase of the process. That first phase I mentioned, known as the plan area and basin setting. So the plan area is mostly organizational information, maps of your land use, your cities and towns, maps of the well density in your basin, description of existing groundwater management activities, general plans, and how they relate to groundwater resources in your basin. And then the basin setting is the technical piece. So, you need to describe your geology. You need to present a hydrogeologic conceptual model. Description of historic and current groundwater conditions. You need to include an estimated water budget for your basin. You need to project out that water budget for a certain number of years, taking into account potential future growth and climate change, and describe your existing monitoring programs and how you plan to refine those to meet the requirements in SGMA. So here in the Santa Rosa Plain, as Jeremiah mentioned, there's been a fair amount of technical work done, as well as voluntary groundwater management planning that preceded SGMA. And so we have a conceptual model of the groundwater system that we're going to be building on to meet the requirements in the GSP. This is a schematic of what was put together by the USGS. And so some of the significant components of that is that in this basin, precipitation and stream bed infiltration make up the majority of the recharge that occurs in the basin. Water coming out of the basin is primarily due to pumping, evapotranspiration from riparian areas, as well as groundwater that's feeding into a number of the streams as base flow. Groundwater generally flows from east to west on the right-hand side of the diagram is the Macama Mountains that and Sonoma Mountain that bound the eastern portion of the Santa Rosa Plain. Groundwater flows from that direction. There's fault zones that in some places impede groundwater flow. As it moves its way across the plain, a lot of water discharges into the Laguna de Santa Rosa as base flow. That's one of the primary discharge areas. And then there's also some water that flows from the western highlands in the Sebastopol area and enters portions of the Santa Rosa Plain groundwater basin. The USGS, as part of their study, developed a pretty sophisticated computer model of the basin that models both surface water and groundwater flow, and that's going to be a really useful and important tool for us to use in putting forth a lot of the content of this plan and making projections into the future. That model, the simulations that were done with that, showed an imbalance, a historical imbalance between the amount of water flowing into the basin versus the amount of water flowing out of about 3,000 acre feet per year. And they found that when they ran those simulations out, incorporating different climate change models, that could be exacerbated by future climate changes as the climate warms and more water demands are needed to meet evapotranspiration requirements of crops as well as cities. They also noted that historically there was declines of groundwater levels, primarily most notably in the southern portions of the Santa Rosa Plain, where previously a lot of urban groundwater use, primarily the city of Roanoke Park, almost exclusively used groundwater to meet their city's water demands, and groundwater levels had dropped in deeper aquifers up to about 100 feet or so. Beginning about 15 years ago, they transitioned their portfolio of water supplies and are using more water that's delivered by the water agency from the Russian River system, also brought in recycled water and instituted some conservation programs. And groundwater levels there have pretty much recovered to pre-pumping conditions in most of the area beneath that southern portions of the Santa Rosa Plain. It kind of demonstrates the importance of really managing both our surface water and groundwater resources together. And fortunately, in this basin and the others we're working in, we've got a good connection of our surface water and groundwater supplies through the Russian River. So this is just kind of an example of some of the requirements of the GSPs, showing kind of what we have in the second column there from our existing studies and groundwater management planning efforts. So we already have a lot of the basic information that we'll need to put into the plans. But there's a significant amount of new information and requirements that are part of SGMA that we'll need to be working on. An example that's relevant here is a description and map of groundwater contamination sites and plumes, rates and map of land subsidence, identification of interconnected surface water and groundwater dependent ecosystems is kind of a new thing that SGMA has brought forward, and there's actually some statewide databases that have been generated by the Nature Conservancy to help GSAs in identifying those groundwater dependent ecosystems. So the next phase that I mentioned, the sustainable management criteria. So this is where the locals need to define what a significant and unreasonable undesirable result is, and that's essentially how sustainability is defined in SGMA, is that you can't have these significant and reasonable undesirable results occurring for any of those six sustainability indicators. So that includes the lowering of groundwater levels, chronic lowering of groundwater levels, reduction in groundwater storage, seawater intrusion, which shouldn't be an issue here in the Santa Rosa Plain, degraded water quality due to groundwater management, land subsidence, and then surface water depletion. So an example of how these undesirable results may be defined is you could look at if groundwater levels fall below X percent of domestic well screens in a certain area, that could constitute an undesirable result. Or if stream base flows fall below X percent of some historical average, that could be an undesirable result. And so once those are defined, then you need to set minimum thresholds and measurable objectives for each of those sustainability indicators, and identify where and how you're going to monitor for those. And so we see this as really being an iterative process that's going to be going back and forth with the advisory committees, the GSA board, and then in our schedule and in our planning, we've built in a number of community workshops during this phase of the project, as we think it's going to be really important to get input from the community on that. So again, once you set those thresholds, the next step is to identify and select projects and actions that can either maintain or achieve sustainability in your basin within the 20-year time frame. So examples of those are increasing the availability of recycled water to offset groundwater pumping. Stormwater recharge projects can help bring basins into balance. Groundwater banking, the water agency is actually currently doing a pilot study in Sonoma Valley with the city of Sonoma on what's called aquifer storage and recovery, where we're utilizing wintertime water from the Russian River system and recharging it into a well, storing it underground. And then the idea is that you could have that water available during the summertime to help meet peak demands or carry it over to help meet future droughts, and it's just a way to essentially store water in the wintertime when it's available and have it available to meet demands in the summer. And so that's an example of another type of project that could be looked at. And then demand management are also, you know, conservation programs, and the GSAs do have the authority to, you know, to limit pumping. And so that's something that can always be looked at as well. Those projects and management actions, there'll essentially be feasibility studies for those. They need to demonstrate, you know, how they'd work, what their relative costs would be. They need to be prioritized and laid out in terms having a pathway to get to sustainability within 20 years. And there'd likely be a need for some, you know, backup or contingency plans as well in case any of those projects are not determined to be working. I mentioned the $1 million grant we received. In that grant, we developed a pretty detailed work plan, and these are the objectives from that work plan to meet SGMA requirements, build on the strong, you know, technical foundation that we have here in the Santa Rosa Plain through those USGS studies and the voluntary groundwater management planning. Provide significant opportunity for public and community engagement, and then to leverage those local resources through the regional coordination that's been going on with the other basins. I'll move through this pretty quickly. There's a lot of information here, but this is just the this is all on our website as well. This is kind of the process schedule that we've laid out for developing the plan, with the goal of having completed by January of 2022. Those four phases are the phases that I described earlier. So this year, we're going to be working on that plan area and basin setting component. And then we anticipate early next year moving into those sustainable management criteria, and then following that up with the projects and actions mid-2020. There's a number of different technical activities that go into each of those components, and there's going to be some iteration, you know, back and forth as we go through the process as well. And then all this work is going to be underpinned by a significant level of community engagement. Community engagement represents, I think, at least 20% of the budget that we put into that grant application. So there's already websites that have been developed that are being improved upon, fact sheets that I think were one of which was included in your board packet for each of the basins, and we envision having, you know, a series of those as we go through this process along with periodic community workshops. We also, in that grant application, looked at, you know, what some of the key data needs and challenges are that we foresee for the Santa Rosa Plain groundwater basin. One of those is gaining improved water use estimates for rural groundwater users, and that includes rural, domestic, and agricultural users. Those were estimated by the USGS to comprise roughly 80% of the total groundwater use in the basin, and currently very little of that is metered or reported. So that's one data gap, and with the fee study, we're actually kind of getting a jump on revisiting some of those estimates. Getting better information on depth-dependent water level, basically the three-dimensional characteristics of the geology and water quality that exists within the basin is something that's needed. Improved information about wells in the basin, their location and construction. DWR's well log database is something that we've been working with and trying to characterize the basin, but there's a lot of uncertainties and kind of missing information on wells in the basin. And then conducting those additional, you know, models of future projected conditions, we'll need to simulate a lot of you know, components that are uncertain in terms of climate change, future land use changes. So we see that as being a challenge for us here in the basin. And then getting more information on how to address the potential connection of interconnected surface water. That's one of the sustainability indicators that needs to be looked at, and we see it as probably being one of the ones that'll require the, you know, some of the most attention in this GSP in this region, due to the strong interconnection between surface water and groundwater resources in our region. Identifying undesirable results and establishing those thresholds, as I mentioned, is going to be a challenging process. And then the need for outreach due to transitioning from this voluntary plan to a new plan with regulatory authority. Really need to get the word out to well owners out there, and that can be a challenge in trying to reach out to rural landowners. So this is my last slide. I just threw up some of the next steps. This is primarily the technical work that's going to be coming before the advisory committee and boards later this year on the plan area and the basin setting, getting into the hydrogeologic conceptual model, the water budget. The GSP regulations also allow for you to break out your basin into different management areas based on the hydrology, the geology, or even, you know, jurisdictional areas. So that's something that we'll get looked at as well this year. And then, as I mentioned, there's the fee study is also ongoing. So with that, I'll close, and happy to we'll try and answer any questions.
Thank you so much, Marcus. We'll take some questions, Greg.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Marcus. Very thorough. A couple of questions, maybe more the social aspects of what you guys are building. You had your list of participants for each of the new agencies. What's the governance structure? I mean, I assume everybody's at the table with an equal vote, but how, you know, who's running the meetings, or is there a self-selection of a chairperson? How did you go about structuring it so you can actually get something done and everybody can be heard?
Yeah. So there is, it's one vote per director is the structure. And there is a chair that, and they were self-selected. So in the Santa Rosa Plain, the chair is Linda Hopkins, and the vice chair is the mayor of Santa Rosa, Tom Schwaldheim, I think. Schwaldheim, yes, thanks. And so the chair plays an active role in running the meetings and helping set the agendas. There's also an administrator in each of the three basins that's providing that service through a service agreement with the GSA. In the Santa Rosa Plain, the Goldridge RCD, Brittany Jensen was serving as the administrator until she went on maternity leave. And our public information officer, Ann Dubé, has stepped in to fill that role in the interim. And so each GSA has an interim administrator. Ms. Minton is the administrator in Petaluma Valley, serving that role for the Sonoma RCD, at least for another month or so, I think. And so they play an active role in helping to run the meetings. The advisory committee meetings, there's also a chair and vice chair that also helps set the agenda. And we also have facilitation support from that's being funded by the Department of Water Resources. So an impartial facilitator helps facilitate those meetings.
Thank you. And then the second question I had is, when you move from a voluntary structure to, you mentioned, and this is looking ahead a little bit, looking maybe of a regulatory approach, who and how will these groups get authority to impose regulations? Had that discussion?
So SGMA provides groundwater sustainability agencies with a significant number of new authorities. So they do have the authorities to regulate groundwater users, to assess fees to groundwater users, to do investigations, to do a number of different activities. There are some, activities that they don't have authority over that are going to require coordination with other agencies, including well permitting. That still resides with the counties. Land use authorities reside with the particular land use authority of the county or the cities. There are some requirements built into SGMA on how those land use agencies and the GSAs need to coordinate and share information. But there are a number of authorities that are provided by the Act to the groundwater sustainability agencies. In terms of regulating specific groundwater users, there one important thing to note is there is an exemption for what are called de minimis users in SGMA, and those are users that are using less than 2 acre feet of water per year for domestic purposes only. So it's really meant to focus on your typical rural residential landowner that's not growing a crop for commercial purposes or anything like that. And GSAs do not have the authority to require metering of those users, but they can assess fees if they're otherwise regulating those users.
Thanks. Marcus, a couple questions for you. So as far as that goes, for one thing, the USGS studies that were done for Santa Rosa Plain in particular, because that's mainly what we're centering on today, is just an amazing piece of social and technical capital that we have in place. I can't imagine trying to meet the sigma requirements in a basin that isn't defined to that degree. It's got to be very hard. From that same standpoint, the way that we regulate, you know, we're water quality, but there's a nexus between water quality and water quantity. You came in partway through our meeting today. We had some discussions this morning about basin planning with a groundwater protection policy in particular was one item. My own personal opinion is that we need to regulate to maintain high quality waters. In fact, we're required by federal and state law to do so. Does sigma itself regulate? I know seawater intrusion is an excellent example of that, right? In the southern Sonoma Plain, certainly seawater intrusion has been an issue. I agree with you that I don't particularly think that's going to happen here. But from the standpoint of quality, did sigma envision a quality component?
Yeah, degraded, avoiding significant and unreasonable degraded water quality due to operation of the basin is one of the six undesirable results or sustainability indicators that needs to be addressed under sigma. And so that's going to be another, you know, area where there's going to be need to be coordination with other regulatory agencies such as yours and others in terms of, you know, who has, you know, what are the roles of the different agencies. You know, so with our GSP, we're going to need to have a good handle on water quality conditions. And the focus on sigma is the operation is pumping from your groundwater basin causing groundwater you know, quality concerns or issues. That's really our is a recharge, you know, project moving you know, a plume around for right. For example. Those are the things that are the kind of the focus of where sigma fits into the picture. And so obviously that's going to require a lot of you know, a lot of coordination and information sharing with other.
Yeah, it strikes me as of the six indicators, the sustainability indicators that you had identified, you know, we probably have a piece of three of those,
yeah.
Right? And that it's interesting. And at the same time, we had gone about a month ago, we had gone to Siskiyou County to do a meeting up there. We met as part of just our being up in that area, we met with the county of Siskiyou and supervisors. And their sigma coordinator was part of that discussion. And he brought up the fact that it was it's a basin-oriented management plan, and that in large part those are snowbound systems up there. They do get precipitation, but a lot of it's snowbound. And that is sigma, in your opinion, you know, in this instance, we're talking about Santa Rosa Plain, Sonoma Valley, and Petaluma Valley, but the, you know, the Wilson Grove uplands or the Franciscan Formation or the Sonoma Volcanics, which feed this system, are vitally important as well. Where do those get picked up in sigma? How are we not blind to the majority of these basins being left out, or the majority of the groundwater the watershed being left out? We're managing basins, but we're not managing the entire basin here.
Yeah. So the, you know, sigma is very clear that, you know, the GSA's authority is, you know, solely within the you know, the Bulletin 118 basin, which
yeah.
is those alluvial areas. There is, that's not to say that the GSAs could not, you know, support activities and actions that could contribute to the sustainability, of their basin up in those, you know, upper watershed areas or connected, you know, hydrogeologically connected areas, such as, you know, supporting, you know, voluntary groundwater level management programs that are currently ongoing in a lot of those areas, supporting, you know, recharge projects or projects that could enhance, you know, recharge to the basins, and then closely coordinating with land use agencies up in those areas to, you know, keep track of to make sure there's not like a rush to, you know, drilling wells just outside of the Bulletin 118 basin are some examples. And in this basin and in Sonoma Valley, where we had an existing, you know, voluntary groundwater management program and a group of stakeholders, so we had a basin advisory panels in each of those basins. They actually developed a document, an insights and recommendations document on just kind of providing some recommendations to the GSA on a number of different issues in each of the specific to each of the basins. And one of those issues was exactly that, how to address these upper watershed areas, which were previously included in the voluntary plans. And so those are some of the recommendations that I just mentioned that are included there.
Yeah, and I see things like the Ag and Open Space in Sonoma County now has a Vital Lands initiative, which now groundwater recharge is certainly part of that. And they could be a part of that component, right? That's outside the basin. They
Absolutely.
Typically are working oftentimes in upland areas. Mm-hmm. Very last thing, I put a meter on my well about 2 years ago. It's quite interesting to meter your well. I have two teenagers. They're not teenagers anymore, and they took some pretty long showers there. But it was surprising because, you know, we kind of have this rule of thumb that, you know, residents uses this much water over a year. It's quite interesting to look at how much water it's actually used. We use at my house, just to disclose, it's about 160 gallons a day at my house. We're completely dependent upon that well. Knock on wood, it's a good well. And that if you want my data, I'd gladly give it to you, man.
All right.
It's pretty interesting to look at water use out there.
Yeah.
It really is. So.
Great. Thank you.
Any other comments or questions? Marcus, we got a couple speaker cards. Hang out for a minute.
Yeah.
Why don't we let speakers come up? Thank you so much.
Okay.
What's that?
Then you do landscape.
No, I got landscape in there, too. Oh. I got that one, too. Vivian Hellowell. Followed by Brenda Edelman.
Hi, I'll be brief. Forgive me for delaying lunch.
It's all right.
Vivian Hellowell, Pacific Coast Federation of Fishermen's Associations. We're part of a North Coast Stream Flow coalition of groups that's most interested in maintaining stream flows and returning stream flows to the rivers for all the beneficial uses, including fisheries. And I'm glad to see that interconnection with surface water is one of the undesirable results that should be limited. I'm interested, though, in the structure of these groups. And I have a question for the speaker. Are the joint powers authorities, as a element of state government, are they under the Brown Act? And are the advisory committees under the Brown Act?
Good question. How about we just let that float for a minute? We'll get that answer
and,
for you.
Then I a very short story. The lower part of the Eel River Basin is a medium priority groundwater basin.
Right.
The first meeting a couple of years ago, the supervisor who was leading the group said, "Well, all we have to do is prove that we're not overdrafting here," and at the same meeting, the county person who does the ministerial signing off on well permits said that well permits were increasing exponentially by number at that time a couple years ago. And so if that they continue to be the permitting by county at the same time that this groundwater authority has some authority over how much is drawn, and people who are de minimis aren't required to meter, I'm interested to see how that works out. I have one request from a number of people that your board live stream online like other water boards do so that we can all see it when we're not here. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Vivian. Do live stream it? Get to see our friendly faces out there in the wide world, huh?
Yes. Is there possible to give an answer to my question?
Hey, Marcus, would you just come up and answer Vivian's question about
Thank
Brown
you.
Act? You bet. About the Brown Act and then for both the Basin Advisory Group and the GSA itself.
Yeah, so both the board meetings as well as the advisory committee meetings are all subject to the Brown Act and the meeting dates and agendas are all listed on the website that's linked right there, as well as meeting minutes and meeting materials. And attendance has been pretty strong from the public at most of the meetings, I'll say, compared with the previous voluntary groundwater management planning. Regulation tends to get people out. And
yeah, just wait till you invoke fees and
that's another thing that's gotten the attendance up. Yeah,
I would imagine you might have a little bump in your attendance. Thank you for that, by the way. Brenda Edelman.
Brenda Adelman, Russian River Watershed Protection Committee. I just had a few comments and concerns, and one of the issues for me is that they set up this basin. Most of the entities use Russian River water, and yet, what am I trying to say here? Skip that part. the groundwater basin was established based on what Marcus said, the alluvial plain. But a lot of the people in the basin do use Russian River water. And in fact, they're taking Russian River water. They're doing, I believe, a 3.5 million gallon, using about 3.5 million gallons of Russian River water to look at the aquifer injection project to use river water to refill the aquifers. And yet there have been no environmental impacts discussed about the lower river and how these projects in the Laguna area might affect the lower river. And that was a concern of mine. I didn't think of the term, but it was the aquifer storage and recovery aspect of it. And not only that, I recall Santa Rosa did many tests of that same type of project in the area that is west of Santa Rosa and in the Rohnert Park Cotati area. And they came up with chemical problems with the water supply. Now, maybe the water agency is looking in a different place. I don't know. So, in other words, there are potential toxins in the earth that would contain the aquifer recovery project that can contaminate the water. But then there's also the potential for unregulated chemicals in the wastewater that could contaminate the groundwater. And I just don't see, and the other issue is they're going to be using some of the Russian River water in order to restore either the Russian River water or water that might get to the Russian River that now won't get to the Russian River. And yet they're not doing any analysis that I'm aware of, and maybe they're planning to, and I don't want to be... come on too strong about this because I don't know all the ins and outs of what their plan is. But I'm just concerned that there are many, many issues here in terms of water quality and impacts to the lower river, because lower flows in the lower river can impact our water quality also. And even though it may be in the winter time, they need to establish at what point taking extra water will not harm the lower river in any way, because floods do provide benefits for the river system. They help to flush out the algae, for one. And so what would be considered extra water? How would that be defined? Anyway, that's all I'll say now, but there are many complex issues to discuss around this whole project. Thank you.
Thank you, Brenda. I don't believe the ASR work plans, pilot study work plans that I read, contemplated in any way using recycled water for groundwater recharge. I believe that was potable. I know that they did it in, as Marcus expressed, in Sonoma Valley. I don't believe it's been done here in Santa Rosa Plain.
No, it's not
wastewater at all. Yeah, it's drinking water. I believe you'd probably have a hard time doing ASR with recycled water in our basin simply from an anti-degradation policy point of view.
Okay. I just had one other question, and that is, what role would your agency be playing in all this if you know yet? You may not know yet.
That's a good question, and I think that yet has to be defined. Yeah, I think that I would look to Jeremiah Puget. And you could maybe round this out at the very end, Jeremiah, and keep that in your pocket for a minute, okay? I have one last speaker card from Mr. Bob Leagy.
Bob Leagy, Russian River Keeper. I will keep this brief. I just wanted a clarification on the term de minimis, and that it's less than 2 acre water feet per year, that those well users are not under the plan. Is that something that the state defined, or is that a definition just applicable to the three basins? Or I just wanted to get some clarification on that.
I believe that's a SGMA definition. That's out of the legislation, Bob, of SGMA itself, of the act.
Great. That's all I had. Thanks.
Fantastic. Thank you. Jeremiah, you want to come up and answer that question? How are you involved as a groundwater protection specialist? How are you involved in this?
Yeah, well, actually, we had the opportunity to meet quite a few years ago and talk about an initial pilot study. And the purpose of the pilot study, and, you know, as Brenda has concerns, really you want to focus on the geochemistry. You can inject water that has a certain chemistry to it, and the groundwater and the materials in the earth may cause a reaction that could either foul your well, it could plug things up. So just from a physical standpoint, you have to do that small-scale pilot project just to look at those things to get them to work. The state, as you know, Chair Noren, has a general permit for aquifer storage and recovery for potable water to be injected because it has trihalomethanes is characterized as a waste byproduct. And when we asked the water agency the tough question, being a very centric, and we've heard you loud and clear, and we support the anti-degradation policy very strongly here in this region. So we asked them that tough question to think about a little bit, and those conversations have been ongoing. The infrastructure has been in place, and the partnerships have been in place to move forward in Sonoma, and the need in Sonoma, frankly, is greater than it is here at this time, so it makes sense for them to take those first few steps in that direction. And Marcus has been kind enough to keep us in the loop as that's been going on, too, so we can get a sense of not only the rolling out the permitting and how that goes for Region 2, but also just to see what the study and the results come back from the water chemistry in that location as well.
Fantastic. And I would imagine as this goes too, there's much to learn, much to do.
Absolutely.
And figure out. At the same time, it is a statewide act, so it is trying to advance the curve not only in the Kern Basin under critical overdraft, but also in the Santa Rosa Plain where, knock on wood, we're doing fairly well.
Yeah.
So it's pretty wide and all-encompassing. It's not meant to be all-inclusive and comprehensive. Certainly there's things that are done in this state with water and groundwater recharge that are quite creative that we would probably not do here, I would imagine. But I believe that this act is a very much-needed process, and the process going forward with the participants that are here is vitally important to the groundwater recharge that we have and to protect the resource, all in all.
Yes, that's right.
I want to thank everybody. Thank you, Marcus, for coming very much. Thank you for the commenters. I don't have any other speaker cards. Are there any other questions from the board? Comments? I don't see any. Thank you so much. We're going to adjourn for closed session and lunch. We'll probably be back in about an hour at 2 o'clock.